Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. The stars were out in force for the Golden Globes last night, the first major televised award show of the season. Someone described the evening as, I quote, a big night for bombs, referring to the many wins for Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer and host Joe Coy's monologue. So there's a lot to talk about. I want to thank Ryan McQuaid, executive editor at Awards Watch, for jumping here onto the show this morning to talk me through this. Hey, Ryan, how are you? How was your night?
It was a wild night. I'm actually recording this live from Los Angeles. It was all a buzz. The Golden Globes, first big event of the Oscar season. It's here.
Let's start by talking a little bit about the show and the telecast. As I said, the celebrities seemed eager to come out post-strikes. Everyone was there, from Oprah to Meryl to Timmy and Taylor, De Niro, Springsteen. What did you make of the show in general? Have they been able to rebrand the Golden Globes? Did they manage that?
Well, you have to take into consideration that they were already at the beginning of the show in a controversy, because it's the Golden Globes, so it's just bound to happen. There was a whole seating arrangement. It was a different setup than the usual, just regular stage in the pit. They had a sort of center stage where it almost was looked like a setup for the Oscars, and that there was this giant in the middle place where the winners would come and stand, the podium, and it then cost a three-tier system as opposed to a usually two-tier system. And it had a lot of people frustrated because executives for films, members of the Golden Globes, the newly formed Golden Globes critics, not the Hollywood Foreign Press, because that's been disbanded. Yes, which it was interesting to see that some people in their speeches still said the Hollywood Foreign Press and some said the Golden Globes critics. It was the first night first time for everybody, and it'll change over the years. But so they didn't, it seemed like, have enough seats for everyone, and everyone was crammed together. And yeah, you're cramming in all these movie stars and Taylor Swift and Selena Gomez and all these pop stars and celebrities. And yeah, it was an insane event. And honestly, the telecast itself, it kind of went pretty smooth. They were on time. They got rid of the tributes, which as somebody that covers awards, I should have known that. And my great friend and our great friend Eric Anderson pointed out that because they did these new comedy stand-up category and the cinematic box office achievement awards, which I'm assuming we're going to talk about that one, they got rid of the Cecil B. DeMille Award, which honors somebody in film, and the Carol Burnett Award, which honors somebody, a legend in television. So that cuts down significantly. Those are about 15 minutes, 20 minutes a piece, it feels like at times. So, and the speeches were less than 2 minutes. They were really rushing everybody off stage.
Yeah, it felt like they had like a gun to them or something, because everyone was like, oh my God, and they really held that 18
And
seconds.
They really did.
Yeah.
I mean, like rushing Christopher Nolan, rushing Emma Stone, rushing all these people off the stage. It was kind of wild. But yeah, I mean, the night started off with the biggest bomb of all time.
Yes, probably let's talk about
one of the worst hosting gigs I've seen. And the Golden Globes, to their credit, have had a lot of bad hosting gigs. I look back to the year Jimmy Fallon did it, and it was very just not funny. The Andy Samberg, Sandra Oh experiment, that didn't work out. Last year with Gerard Carmichael, which was very hit or miss and kind of mean-spirited and definitely going after the Globes, but just didn't have the comedic bite to it, more than just a commentary. This was What happens when you don't, when he said it point blank, this is what happens when you don't prepare more than 10 days in advance for your host. And I'm not saying that that is a blame on his writers, but then it's a blame on the Globes for not having this prepared enough. And I get that they just got the deal with CBS and all that, but they could still have had the host ready to go. It's a lazy excuse, but it also just shows that, like, why the Oscars have Kimmel already announced, you know, 4 or 5 months in advance to make sure that their night goes off better.
Yeah, I get that.
Someone that's just ready to end. And then the jokes are just not funny.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The jokes were bad. And then he did some things that really felt not great, especially coming out of the strikes when he literally throws his writers under the bus and says, the good jokes are mine, the other ones I haven't written. It just did not feel funny at all. And also just kind of felt like that cringe moment when you feel like someone – he was himself feeling that he was bombing, and you could see that. And Ricky Gervais, who I'm not a big fan of, but he still can sort of pick himself up and like, whatever, I don't care what you guys think. And you feel like he still can command the stage. This felt like it was shrinking back. But it was really awkward to see, I had to say.
It was someone that honestly had never done one before. And at least when Ricky makes a comment, it is a biting comment, and you're talking about it, and we're sitting here, and we're like, wow, did you remember that he said that? Jeez Louise, that was rough, but it had its intended audience just kind of on the edge of their seat, and it also makes the entire audience, like, on edge, right? Because what is Ricky Gervais going to say? Or Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who have done it swimmingly for years. And I think, you know, people like Seth Meyers have come and done a great job because they know how to work a room. Yeah. He didn't know how to work a room. And then,
it's not a roast. They feel like they always want to take it. They take the wrong approach when they do it this way.
He took the wrong approach, but then he also admitted that he didn't see any of these films, essentially. And he dumbed down Barbie to the most, I'm going to say it, misogynist level that you could possibly do. And it was... echoes of Seth MacFarlane, we saw your boobs, but at least in that skit, the actresses were in on it. This was poking at, like, hey, Barbie's the big dumb movie with boobs. And it's like, no, the only boob here is you. And so, and then, like, yeah, the De Niro
thing.
The
Barry Keoghan penis joke and the De Niro thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a avalanche of stupidity. And it just shows that just because you have a stand-up comedy award doesn't mean that all these stand-ups are going to work. Honestly, Eric and I were talking about it. Jim Gaffigan, who presented the stand-up comedy award, he would have been a wonderful choice because it's that kind of simple humor that the audience was really, really liking. And it was poking fun at himself and not taking it too seriously. And he has a great brand. I don't know if Joe
Coy may have said no.
Just the right choice.
What I've heard is that people said no before they ended up where they ended up.
That's the other thing is that we can say, oh, we want this person, that person. But nowadays, because of online and Twitter and all the different social media platforms, it's very easy to just, like, say, no, I don't want to do it because they don't want the pressure and it hurts their brand. But then you do something like this and it definitely – he's gonna, you know, I just look bad on him. He's never gonna do it again, never. So
I feel kind of sorry. It must be a hard day today to read all the.
I mean, he said it. I don't feel too bad for him. No. I mean, like, he said all those jokes still, and coming out of a writer's strike and throwing your writers in the bus, I would have booed him too. Yeah.
Any other celebrity moments that were? I really loved the Jennifer Lawrence when her name was being called out as a nominee, and she looks into the camera and mouths, "If I don't win, I'm out of here." It's just so funny.
But it seemed like she was all over the night, and she just had a great time. It's just wonderful to have movie stars in the room and them having fun. It looked like, you know, that Selena Gomez and Taylor Swift were gossiping over Timothy Chalamet. It looked like there were
Kendall and Chalamet making out in their corner.
Right? And then all the boys looking great, like Andrew Scott and Pedro Pascal and Coleman Domingo all sitting next to one another and just like, this is an overload. Whoever scheduled these tables knew exactly what they were doing. Yeah. And then, yeah.
And Yorgos Lanthimos having a fan moment when he should be thanking for his award. And he's like looking, all he can talk about is Bruce Springsteen.
Listen, as someone that's met Bruce Springsteen in real life, I understood where Yorgos was at in that moment. And I would too. I mean, like, there's all these great artists in the room. Scorsese and even Yorgos himself. There's all these great people, but when you have your eye on someone you've admired and you see them right there and it's Bruce Springsteen, you're like, holy hell, it is Bruce Springsteen, you know? And it's like, how do you not get fumbled up? But yeah, I mean, it was just great to see. It wasn't necessarily a celebration of the Globes. It was a celebration of this wonderful year in cinema that we had, and everybody showed up. And what was so crazy about the night was how every award pretty much got a standing ovation from everyone, and that they were willing to celebrate all these things. And it felt like a celebration after the long summer and the long fall of just the delay of SAG and the WGA from getting their deals by the studio. It just felt that everyone was like, okay, now we can have a drink,
free.
We can
we're
sit
out.
Back, and we can celebrate these movies and movies that they love and television shows that they love, because TV on the TV side, there were enormous sweeps in all the categories. There,
yeah. So. We're going to get into the awards. I just want to quickly mention in how great Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig were. I mean, that was the
talk about somebody that should host.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they get the question every year. In my opinion, they're smart not to do it, because these little things that they do, they go a long way. They are so funny.
Can I tell about one that I think was I went back and I watched it, and it was kind of weird. Was maybe my weirdest moment of the night, which is saying a lot, was the America Ferrera Kevin Costner.
What was going on with Kevin Costner?
The hell was wrong with Kevin Costner? Like,
it's like he was there for a while and then he just like zoned out or something and went in a completely
flung out of space. Yeah, it was weird. It's like the dude was going off on his own thing, and I'm, you
maybe
know,
he
oh
needs
God,
to hunker down in Santa Barbara again.
I think so. I felt bad for her because she was like, we had a bit and you've just kind of ruined it. So yeah, that was weird. But no, I mean, Wiig and Ferrell, just that whole bit just had me on the floor.
Well, it was a huge night for so many people. And there was also a huge night for Ryan McQuaid. Oppenheimer, 5 awards.
Yes. Yeah.
Happy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to be confident about this at all. I mean, that's the thing, is that I had people texting me back and forth like, Oppenheimer did it. I'm like, yeah, but I'm still like, Oppenheimer, everyone can celebrate. And I'm like nervous in the corner, you know, because I mean, it is big. I do think that it is seismic, and because you have a front runner now. And so what does that mean? It can mean two things. It can mean that this is a steamroller that's going to steamroll through everything, which it definitely can. It can win Critics' Choice next week. It's going to do really well in the guilds. It's not one of those where it's like, oh, well, maybe it won't or maybe it will. No, Oppenheimer is here to stay. And just how will it do with PGA? How will it do with SAG? How will it do with BAFTA? Like, those are how will it do on the Oscars for nominations? We were expecting double digit nominations, but does it overperform? Does it miss something? You know, it's not on the visual effects shortlist. Not that it was probably likely to happen, but people were sort of like, oh, look, Oppenheimer's weak. And then it wins 5 Globes and like, nope, it's strong. And so people are going to go back and forth on their narratives on it. I think that you have to take a little bit with a grain of salt that last year, The Fabelmans and Banshees of Inisherin won these awards. And the year before it was Power of the Dog and I believe West Side Story. And so you have to just take it as this is a nice win, celebrate the moment, celebrate the evening. But it was important for those speeches.
Right.
And I think all five of those speeches from the Oppenheimer gang were great speeches because those people know how to talk. Yeah. And Robert Downey Jr.'s speech, that just feels like what I told like you.
I'd Robert Downey Jr. sealed it. Yeah. I mean, because it feels like the other ones I had predicted and I felt so, I feel pretty secure about going forward and you know, that Nolan's going to take director and Ludwig and all that. But Robert Downey Jr. was like, well, Willie would now, after that speech, I feel like he's on a roll.
That room went. He's going to be on. I mean, he's done really, really well with the critics' prizes as well, too. He's kind of taken, he's quietly taken the lead over everybody, you know, all of his counterparts in the category. And yeah, it's what I told you guys at Telluride, and I kind of believe it still, is that he is a kid that's been in this industry for his entire life. His dad is a important filmmaker to many, including people like Paul Thomas Anderson in the independent film realm. And I think after last year with the documentary about his dad, he's been very open and honest. He's making serious art here with Christopher Nolan, and he's been very open and he's been very funny, and he's been exactly the kind of person that both you celebrate and then also deserves it. And yeah, I don't think
point,
that
he's royalty.
He is
his time. Yeah.
If Jamie Lee Curtis can win for nothing, he can win for performances is very much more. I'm not ready to call it just yet because I do think Gosling is still a favorite among so many people. I think he could win either SAG or Critics' Choice. I think Barbie's going to do really well at Critics' Choice. So everybody just calm down on the online about Barbie.
I think so
just,
too.
You know, but I
Barbenheimer is not over.
It's not over yet. This is just one battle in the long, friendly war between both of these films, because these filmmakers really do like each other and respect each other.
But I was happy to see Poor Things, even though I was thinking Barbie would win Best Comedy Musical. But Poor Things, I was really happy about that. Barbie did win the weird category, though. Let's get
Does it
into
count?
That.
Does it really count? We've been trying to figure out if it counts or not. I mean, I've told
you
I've
made
said
the
this
most
to you.
Money here. Get a prize.
But is most money the real cinematic achievement? Like, I think
apparently
I don't think it is.
It's
I
not.
Think
but
it's not the real cinematic achievement is actually Oppenheimer is the movie that's a 3-hour R-rated biopic in the middle of summer going up against something like Barbie and making nearly $1 billion. That's a cinematic and box office achievement, as opposed to, yes, Barbie overperforming is that, but it was not too surprising. We all thought it would be a hit. We didn't think it'd be a mega hit, and that's what I think it's being celebrated for. Listen, I'm all for either Barbie or Oppenheimer winning that over Taylor Swift, so that's fine with me. And she still doesn't have a Golden Globe, which makes me very happy. So it really was a wonderful night just for myself, and I know Sofia Simonello is listening, so I know she was very happy about that as well. But no, I agree.
The
I thought that
Swifties.
I thought that Poor Things, it wasn't a surprise. It was probably between the two of them, and I knew Emma Stone would win.
Yes, that was
in that category. But I don't think that it's unsurprising, but I do think that it's not going to be it's good momentum for it to win here, but I still have reservations about Poor Things being an across the board contender with the Academy in terms of wins. Nominations, it'll do well, but again, like, The Favourite got a ton of nominations and it really only got Olivia Colman. And I don't think that Emma Stone, while good of a performance it is, I do not think that she will be able to stop the other winner, which I think that was
Lily
the first
Gladstone.
One. Lily Gladstone is going to win this Oscar.
Oh, and you talk about a speech.
What a speech. She's going to be making them, so everybody just get used to it. She's phenomenal. I was able to meet her while I was out here. And she's so present and so excited and so calm, not like in a confident way, just like she understands the severity of it and she's taking it all in one step at a time. And it's she's a lovely, lovely person and it's a lovely performance. And so, yeah, she's, if anyone is the sweeper, it's actually her. and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers, who is just showing her continued path of dominance.
It's their season. They're going to go.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
And Lily's speech, she feels like she was the one speech of the evening that really could talk about the importance of her win.
Yeah, and she was, well, I mean, the film is, I mean, it's such a historic moment for her. And she mentioned it, and she has every right to, because, you know, Michelle Yeoh said the same thing last year, of how these historical things are going to start crumbling. And that's a great thing to see. And, you know, she brought her mom. Charles Melton brought his mom. People bringing their moms. You know, this is such a great night for. And she is the thing about that movie that you take away. You know, I think Scorsese's direction and everything is fantastic, but it's Lily Gladstone all the way. And she's
everywhere. That was the one award for that movie. Do you see it getting more going forward?
No, I don't. Because I think Oppenheimer is at the detriment of Killers of the Flower Moon. I think that Oppenheimer is going to stay longer. And there's more. It's weird to say it, but last night was interesting when Nolan won. And I know everyone's going to go, "Oh, Ryan, you're just talking about Nolan." But his speech was interesting. And very emotional, too. I mean, think about that. Christopher Nolan is this highly celebrated director that we all think, oh, he's gotten his flowers many times. That was the first time since 2008 he had been on the stage for Golden Globes to accept anything. And he didn't even accept that award the last time. It was for Heath Ledger. And what an enormous weight that is on a director of his magnitude. So I do think that it is his... it's his time. And I think that it's others' time as well. But definitely that group has not been celebrated. Downey hasn't been celebrated. You know, Killian beating Bradley Cooper and his rise, as he's won the most critics' prizes so far and the first televised one. And now Nolan. And the film, and the film's producer, Emma Thomas, who is the unsung hero, and not many people really
his wife
get to talk to her. Yeah, they don't get to talk about Alma, his Alma, essentially, and running the whole show, you know? And so I think that you're going to see speeches from these folks a lot. And it feels like Eric said, James Cameron. I've said Steven Spielberg. Those moments in history where, you know, Peter Jackson, where it was their time to finally give these genre guys that took a big risk and it paid off big time, not just for themselves, but for Hollywood as well.
You mentioned Bradley. What's going on there? Is his momentum going to pick up, or, I mean, his 6 years of learning to conduct for nothing?
6 years and talking to Cara Mulligan on the phone a year in advance and all the stuff, and Candide, and I don't know if I have to hear about Candide again. No, I think he is not done yet. And because if we remember the Globes last year, that went to Austin Butler and to Colin Farrell, and then it went to Brendan Fraser for The Whale at the Oscars. So it's not done yet. I do think that he could very well win Critics' Choice. Killian could very well win as well. Paul Giamatti is also someone to consider for The Holdovers. I do think it is, that movie won two awards. And I was also kind of thinking the way that Giamatti had just won, that Holdovers was going to win, and yet Poor Things won. The Holdovers has played extremely well.
Yes.
And Giamatti is somebody that also has an overdue narrative. The last time he was, you know, in an Alexander Payne movie, he was snubbed for an Oscar nomination. So there is that as well. And the movie is very popular. But I don't think Bradley's out of it. I think that he just has to play the long haul. And, you know, I think that that movie is going to do well. Actors really love it. It is the traditional, right? The traditional biopic that we've seen win. And it would just be wild if Bradley did what Rami Malek and Gary Oldman and others have done in the past, releasing that photo a year in advance and doing the whole prosthetic and everything. And then
which just felt like the love, there was this big thing for him, and then it just fell.
Well, it felt like that for a couple of films, right? Like there was this massive momentum for a movie like American Fiction. And that movie has kind of quieted down over the last couple of weeks. You know, Maestro, depending on what you hear online, you know, and it's, you have to also remember, this is a critics group still. And yes, they are now 300 members and they're more international. So there's a likelihood of them being more with the consensus of their other critics groups. But there's still no Oscar voters for the most part, probably at all, in this group. And so, yes, they're going to see speeches around, but I mean, the Oscars went pretty much in the opposite direction of the Globe winners last year. So, but that's with 90 people as opposed to 300. So what, you know, what does it all mean? We're going to have SAG later this week, have their nominations. We're going to have DGA have their nominations. I think Bradley will show up at one, if not both, maybe. Depends on how they really dig his direction. Maestro, they nominated him for A Star Is Born. I do not think he's out of this yet. He's just got to sit there and maybe just buy the time a little bit. You know what I mean? Maybe
he's Killian not good at just sitting there, Ryan.
No, I know he's fidgety. He's got to just get out there and conduct. But I mean, Christina, the thing about becoming a front runner, as you know, and is that you then get a target on your back. And so you'll then, if anyone's able to mount a campaign,
Ryan,
a target.
I've never been a front runner.
You have in my eyes. But you know that if one team can mount a campaign, a focused, targeted campaign, it'd be the Netflix crew. So I don't think that he's out of it just yet. It's not that he's not losing to a deserved winner in Killian Murphy, who gave a career defining performance. Both of them have really, it's strong work from either one of them.
And now it feels like Killian versus Paul Giamatti. I mean,
yeah,
that was a really strong.
Paul's just sitting right there.
Yeah, he's just
smelling like fish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was really happy for Anatomy of a Fall, especially in screenwriting, which I thought was, I think Eric wrote or tweeted that there hasn't been a foreign script like since the 80s or something to win this category. So that was great. And then there was the whole thing that Justin Trier, director, that she, in her speech, she divulged her own thoughts on Sandra's, if she did it or not. Did you get that?
Well, you could take it two ways. You could say that she spoiled everything, but then you can also talk about that the film is technically about the husband's suicide, and that's really what the, you know, the son is. That's the whole climax of the third act, right?
But lots of people don't think it's a suicide.
Yeah, well, you know it. Well, you know, yeah. I mean,
and she said it was a suicide, then people are thinking that's what the director's point was.
Or is she playing to the audience and twisting it, twisting the knife a little bit?
Later, she goes to the hotel room with Snoop.
Yeah, she mentioned Snoop in her speech for the non-English language winner, and I was so angry with her because I'm never going to forgive her for that scene. That scene's terrifying. I thought that when she won for screenplay, I went, "Well, Jesus Christ, we have chaos in the screenplay categories even more, because Barbie moved to adapted screenplay by the Academy, and so did Origin. They made the, you know, they made the WGA made those decisions to move those over. So we're going to see a lot more Barbie wins in an original screenplay. And we're not going to know if that's going to stack up against something like Oppenheimer or Poor Things or Killers of the Flower Moon or American Fiction or all these movies that have won adapted screenplay prizes, but Barbie hasn't. So like, is the de facto to Barbie? And then in an original screenplay, you have the passion for the holdovers. You have the passion for a movie like Past Lives. But as all that passion just gone away, and we haven't talked about that, there is enormous wave of passion for Anatomy of a Fall, and is just continuously proving
people love it,
that the French are morons. What
why
is wrong with them?
Admit it. I don't.
They do this every year. It feels
well, you
like.
Know my theory, because she made the Cannes speech. She was very
yes.
critical to the whole French cultural ministry in there. How they do film funding, and I think
yeah.
this is her penalty.
Yeah, and I think if a man said it, then they would still be up for best foreign language film at the Oscars, you know.
Right.
And it's bullshit. And I hope that she wins everything. I hope she wins the Oscar, and then I hope she goes up there and I hope she gives them the giant middle finger. Like I really do. Like she that movie is in a great position. And it's stupid by France, because whatever she said, she still won the Palme. She won the Palme d'Or. Like, what are you doing? And it's not to say that Taste of Things isn't a bad film, but like, it's clearly this movie is, this would, this,
and
I mean, Zone of Interest
clearly
is.
Clearly even before. I mean, it's not like it's a
yeah.
surprise.
It's been between it and Zone of Interest since Cannes. And it's, and Zone of Interest will probably win the Oscar for international feature, but it's clearly the international film of the year is Anatomy of a Fall. And I was actually surprised, because the way in which it won screenplay and won non-English language film, I was thinking, does Sandra have a chance to upset Lily? And obviously that didn't happen,
so
but it plays in the back of your head with the fact that that is a capital Gray A performance. It is a fantastic, and there's so much to Sandra's
and
performance.
Sandra
there
won a
and
couple of big critic awards.
Yes, and you have her work in Zone of Interest, you know, that couples it. So is it kind of like, you know, how we've seen in actresses of the past where they're up for one but are really winning it for two, you know? So
did you know that the Zone of Interest dog is Sandra's own dog?
Really?
Yeah. I heard her say that Messi, the dog in Anatomy of a Fall, is so well trained, and that's why he could do all those things. Well, the dog in Zone of Interest, all that dog does is chase after her. So it worked perfectly, because that dog is just supposed to just run after her.
I didn't know that. That's great. That's wonderful.
Before we move on here, I just want to, let's talk about Melton, Charles Melton, who we didn't see. Do you think that he will find his way back in coming Guild Awards?
Don't ask
Oscars.
Me that. I love him. I love him so much. He looks so good on the carpet with his mom and his hair and the blue suit. Oh my God, he looked incredible. I hope so. I know that there's been a little bit of the rumblings of the controversy, you know, by the I don't know his name, I apologize. But Mary Kay Letourneau's husband,
yeah,
ex-husband. Yes. And I know that he's made comments and vilified it and you know, the film, and taken issue with it, even though the movie's inspired but not about him. And it's a bunch of stuff. But I do think that, you know, Milton missed the BAFTA shortlist. I'm hoping SAG comes through for him. I just don't know how you don't watch that performance and see something truly spectacular in it and everything. So, I'm hopeful for that. I do think that, you know, May, December, and I mean, it was honestly, like, it was a really rough night for Netflix with May, December and Maestro not doing so good. But, you know, just like Barbie, it's another ceremony down the road, And I think that though, I think these movies will do just fine. Still, there's tons more Critics' Choices or wins to come out. I mean, Milton could win Indie Spirit.
I think we're going to see more All of Us Strangers. We're going to see more.
Yes.
I think there's
Andrew Scott looking incredible last night. Wow. Oh my God. Him and Jonathan Bailey. Oh my God. Did they coordinate that? I wonder if they did. You know, that those fellow travelers and those strangers, they've been coordinated and taken photos all year together. So I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. But fellow strangers indeed. I hope so. And, I will say one thing is that I was so happy that The Boy and the Heron won animated feature because it was the first time that Hayao Miyazaki had ever won a Golden Globe. And I hope that carries all the way to the Oscar. I would love to see him get another one the first time. It would be his second win since Spirited Away. And it's a wonderful film. It's one of my favorites of the year.
Very possible, I think. And Ludwig Göransson's win was great as well. Just to quickly mention TV, we have Succession, The Bear, and Beef. Really, there was not a lot of surprises except for maybe DeBicki, who I hadn't counted on for her role as Diana in The Crown. But it was a wonderful speech by Kieran Culkin. Makes you miss the fact that we won't be seeing any more Succession with this group together. Any other thoughts on the TV prizes?
Just that, Emmys are in a week from the time of recording. And, I expect, even though the Creative Arts Emmys completely shut out Succession, including Nicholas Bertel.
That was insane to shut out Nicholas Bertel. He's never won an Emmy, I heard.
He won for the opening title credits, I believe, for the first season, but not for his work. I mean, think of Christina, that third episode and like the final 15 minutes of that and that music and how I don't even want to go into it. It's a travesty. But no, I think Succession is going to have a really great night. Obviously, you know, the Emmys have a track record of when it's your final season. They like to give you everything. It is interesting that it went to Kieran Culkin, though I do not count out Jeremy Strong, still a previous winner in the category. And
I predicted Jeremy Strong in our Emmys prediction show, but now I'm thinking, Karen, that funeral speech could be him at the Emmys as well.
Yes, and I mean also the final image of the show is him as well in the bar. And it's like, yeah, he had an amazing year. It's kind of tough that you can't give it to both of them because they're so fantastic on that show. And then Sarah Snook and Matthew McFadden, I expect them to win Emmys as well. And DeBicki was an interesting choice, though she's the one that's, even though that season has come under fire, she's been the one that has been the highlight for many in terms of her depiction of Princess Diana. So I don't know if that'll correlate with the Emmys. I mean, the Emmy voting was done months ago, and we're just giving them out now. So... but I expect The Bear to do really well alongside Ted Lasso because it's Lasso's last season. But you had The Bear, which is, this is weird. So the Globes were celebrating the second season of The Bear, but the Emmys that we all have next week are presenting for the first season of The Bear and the last season of Ted Lasso.
And so, that's because these Emmys were supposed to have been in September, as they usually are, but were delayed to January because of the strikes. And so we're going to get an Emmys now in next week as well as in September. So 23 and 24 after
each other. Hey, this is what happens when you have a strike and everything goes completely to hell in Hollywood. But thank God that they got everything that they the writers and the actors deserved. I also expect Beef to do really well. That's been like the show that everyone has just dominated those categories. And so I think a lot of what we saw might be happening again on Monday night.
Right. So we'll get one more chance at a bunch of lovely speeches from people like Karen and
just not Brian Cox. Because he might get angry.
Yeah.
He eats a Snickers bar, that guy. I'll tell you that.
Okay, finally, what are the big things coming up this week? You mentioned SAG, so it's the nominations, right?
SAG nominations are this week, and so that could give us – it's going to be big. SAG nominations are going to be huge, not in just the individual categories, but the ensemble. The ensemble has been big. It's been sort of a tested theory that we've kind of talked about at Awards Watch, but the last couple of years it's been about – which ensemble do you want to meet the most? Do you want to meet the Coda family? Do you want to meet the Everything Everywhere All at Once family? So of those ensembles, who do they want to meet the most? I mean, obviously the cast of Oppenheimer, the cast of Barbie, the cast of Killers of the Flower Moon. But what are the two other ones potentially? Does something miss? You know what I mean? Does something not make it in there? That'll be interesting.
Poor Things, maybe, right?
I don't know.
Holdovers. Nice little contained cast.
American Fiction, do we see a wild card like Air or May December, or Saltburn or something get in there? You never know. Or maybe Anatomy, if everybody loves it the way they love it. Maybe they get it in there. I don't know. We'll see. There's a couple of open spots there. DGA, which, I mean, it'll be Nolan and four others. And because it really doesn't matter, because it's his time and he's going to win the whole thing. But yes, and then Critics' Choice is next weekend. The voting for Critics' Choice is this week. So I'm assuming that a lot of these Globes and last-minute predictions and last-minute events will start happening in Los Angeles. Because we'll have Globes and then Critics' Choices are right behind them. And then there's a little bit of a waiting period.
And we both vote for Critics' Choice.
Yes. And then we'll be having a little bit of a waiting period before we start having SAG. And then Oscar nominations are in a couple of weeks. It's not that far away from those. And then those are the real telly things. And then we get to see, after the nominations, the next phase to then the winners.
Ryan, we're going to have a lot to talk about, and I can't wait to talk to you and Eric during this period that's coming up. Tell everyone where they can read and all your things.
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, Letterboxd, at RyanMcQuaid77. You can find me at awardswatch.com, where I've got interviews, reviews, two podcasts, the Awards Watch podcast and Director Watch. Please go listen to those. We're doing a new series on the films of William Friedkin, and I'm looking forward to that. And also just continuing to talk with you and everybody in this awards season. And I just want to make one thing for your listeners and everybody else out there that listens to our award shows. These movies are really great this year, and these filmmakers have a lot of respect for one another. So let's have respect for one another out there when talking about these during the awards race. Let's not pit Barbie, Oppenheimer, Killers, Poor Things, all these movies against one another. Let's celebrate whatever they decide to pick. And let's just, try to be better than how we usually have been in the past, so then we could actually have fun while this is going on rather than it being an exhausting process.
Hear, hear. Well said. Thank you so much, Ryan. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.